happened here was also there. There's this tradition of, you know, like of Palestinian solidarity, and maybe it comes from a place that most people probably don't even remember, but it's there, and it probably stems from these mobilizations in the 60s and the 70s. It's why, like, you know, like people that are part of alternative spaces or movements, whatever, they wear keffiyehs even like before the protest movements, just because it's part of this image culture, it's just there. And I think this is important, maybe also for ourselves as members of this movement, to make this explicit and to share it with as many people that we can, which is maybe one of the purposes of art or creativity or writing. That's one of the things that we can do. So I think this memory aspect is very important. And then the other thing is that it's clear that we cannot expect anything from our governments. They're just squarely our enemy and our oppressor. And there's really not much of a point, I think, in organizing demonstrations expecting that this will somehow change the politicians' minds, because it just won't. So the other thing that we could do, and I think something that actually does always happen in these moments of mobilization and protest and revolt, is that we create our own infrastructures and our own institutions to create dual power, you know, to be able to rely on ourselves, because that's what we know. We know that we can rely on each other, but not on the state or on these bigger structures. And one of the interesting things that happened, I think, in Amsterdam, Barbie, we talked about it before, was the People's University. So after all the encampments were evicted and I mean, so many people were arrested and beaten down, then instead of occupying the university again, people squatted the building and created their own place of organizing and learning. And that still exists, you know, that's still going on. And it seemed like a friend of mine who was also involved in that project, who is Palestinian and came here, I think, as a refugee, said something that reminded me of what you were saying before, Ahmed, that he feels protected not by the Dutch state, you know, like the state was supposed to grant him protection, whatever, but that's not where he feels the safety. He feels protection and he feels safety within the immigrant communities and the alternative social movements that he's part of. And I think that's very, very telling, and in a way, I think that's just very, very important. Because that's where we do have power. A little of this, it's just something that we can do. We can provide this sense of protection and safety to at least to each other, and try and build our own institutions and infrastructure, and not rely on the state or its institutions, or expect that someday they will change their minds and become good people and do the right thing, because that's obviously not going to happen.
Well, one thing that's very exciting about these small windows that you've all described into both your own experience but also the movements that you're part of is the fact that this is mirrored in cities around the world. And I think I just want to underline again that when we see images of the Palestine Solidarity Movement and the protests that are portrayed, even on stations like Al Jazeera, often left out of those sort of reference clips to the protest movement, we don't see as often the images from Jakarta or Johannesburg or, you know, other cities around the world where there are important mobilizations for Palestine taking place. And, you know, just going back to this point about memory and also collective culture, one of the challenges today is very often that I think there's this sense, you know, on a cultural level, and I'd also, of course, love to hear your thoughts about this, that our movements are well documented. And, like, you know, because people have access to social media, for example, or, you know, image production through smartphones, there's a sense that movements are well documented. But missing in that documentation, which is also kind of temporary, is a lot of the process and the ideas, right? And I'm thinking about the sort of like the staying power and how do we sort of gather ourselves in these moments to think about not just documenting, say, for example, an action, But the ideas and the debates and the discussion, you know, Ahmed, you talked about the portraits you're doing, right? This is something that, that remains. It's from your own personal reflections on this moment, but it's also about something that can sort of communicate at this time, both, you know, the sort of experiences that that you're going through, but many people are going through. So I guess, in terms of thinking about a broadcast like this, you know, I just encourage people who are listening in different parts of the world to think of this as sort of a window into the respective work of all these initiatives that have taken place in Amsterdam that, you know, can really not be told in a one-minute news clip about the fact that there were protests in Amsterdam. Now, I mean, that's awesome that there were protests in Amsterdam, but all the networks and experiences and the learning that takes place was really important too. And I just want to underline that point of the learning that happens in social movements, right? Because learning is such a term that's often co-opted by institutions. But the late scholar Aziz Chaudhry wrote a lot about this, about the learning that happens in radical movement spaces and how people are transformed by that process. And some of you pointed to this. And I just wanted to sort of underline that that sort of collective learning and the collective experience as sort of really broadening that capacity to think differently about power, but also think differently about history and what stories are told and what is represented and what is not. So we're kind of coming to the 1 hour mark of our broadcast on Radio Hara. And so maybe I'll pass the mic to anybody who would like to share anything on that last.
I think one of the things that personally I've been faced with when it comes to documenting our own movement is repression. And thinking also how images in the world that we live in a hyper-documented, hyper-surveilled world. I mean, in Amsterdam, in our city, there's literally almost four or five different neighborhoods in the city that are always monitored by the cops, by surveillance cameras that are everywhere. And people can watch them online on YouTube, so you can just log in and watch live what is happening in your city. And so it also, there's all these questions about how do we document what we are doing if it's not in terms of creating images that go against this culture of over surveillance of police going into comrades' homes and doing raids at their houses and looking at what kind of material do you have and where do you keep your signal information with disappearing messages because you're going to get caught by the cops and you're going to get arrested and they're going to figure out. So I think that for us, at least, what's been really difficult is this idea of maintaining archival for our movement, while taking into consideration surveillance. And I remember in the student encampment, a lot of people were thinking, how do we allow people to take pictures of us? You know, like what's going to happen if our faces are going to be there? What's going to happen to us being doxxed? What is going to happen to the university finding out that we were part of this radical movement? Yeah.
Yeah, so I would just like to thank that anybody who's been tuning in internationally on Radio Hara and those in Bethlehem, radiohara.net. We will share the archive of this conversation through the archive page I've set up, which is soundcloud.com/freecityradio. And thank you so much to Yusuf in Bethlehem for walking us through the whole technical aspect of this process to play this conversation from Amsterdam, and of course Ibrahim here at OT301, and Sarah, who worked so hard to curate a lot of the voices that you're hearing here. So thank you. This has been Voices Across Borders, live from OT301 in Amsterdam. So I think, so we're all here together, right? So there's a lot to share, and we've actually brought some banner making material.
Yeah.
But I would like just to open it up for a moment if anybody had any questions or comments or reflections or things that people wanted to mention in regards to what was brought up, because there was a lot brought up. And I'll also just say I brought some, I don't need that anymore, I brought some zines. We made a zine in Montreal called No Silence, and it's testimonials of people who were part of the encampment in Montreal and poems and so on. And this is a benefit for Radio Haro, if you'd like to get one. It's to support an art residency project for artists from the Global South that takes place in June in Bethlehem. So it's 10 euros if you're interested in that. But yeah, please, if you have any questions. And then we have banner making afterwards. Yeah.
Banner making for the arts fair that's happening on the 21st of November in Rotterdam, which is something that happens every year. It's organized by the Ministry of Defense in the Netherlands, and they invite basically weapon manufacturers from all over the world, including Israeli ones, that come to front and decorate and expose their newest technologies for states to buy. So they do presentations of the latest technologies. And in regards to the Israeli ones that will be participating this year are Rafael and Elbit Systems, to say the few. And those both advertise and market their products as tested on the battleground. So they're tested on Palestinians, and that makes those technologies and those bombs' value go up, because they're, you know, it's a degree of quality. So there is multiple coalitions of anti-war movements, I would call them, organizings that are specifically calling for a protest on that day, on the 21st of November, in Ahoy in Rotterdam. So bring your mother, bring your cousin, bring your sibling, bring your neighbor, megaphone, warm gloves, hot tea, your voices, and try to, you know, speak out against the hyper-militarization of the world, and in specific Europe and its borders. Yeah.
What time and where exactly? Is it on both days of the expo?
I think they're calling for the protest on the 21st. I know that on the 22nd in Den Haag, there is also the Dutch state is being sued by a collective of human rights organizations and NGOs that all collaborated and raised a court case against the Dutch government's involvement in the genocide, and the fact that they refused to cut ties and still buy weapons from them. What time is it?
Last year it was literally from the morning until quite the afternoon, so it's 21st. But there's a page for that, which is Vito Orloch on Instagram, and that really helps.
Yeah. They also have on their bio a lot of material for posters and banners and information translated in multiple languages, Dutch, English, Arabic, Turkish, and so you can give that information to whoever you want.
Anybody have questions? There's a lot of stuff shared. We can also just chat in the cafe if nobody has questions. Yeah, go ahead.
Not a question really, but just a comment. It was really inspiring to hear all that you have to share. And I'm based in Finland, and heavily involved with Arts and Culture Solidarity Network, and I didn't know about the Freedom University. Is it called
People's Free?
I think we had a lot of the encampments at university. hiring from here. It also, I think, speaks because you're all doing very different things, and it speaks to the fact that, yeah, the system that's currently happening isn't working, but there's so many other options, and we're making that happen.
Other, thank you so much for your, for sharing that. Represent feminists. I never met somebody from Finland.
Oh, I'm not from Finland.
Okay, living in Finland. Okay.
Can I just say one more thing about the archive? As you mentioned this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of images going around, and a lot of it is on social media. But I mean, these are also just evil corporations, and you know, we just give all our data to them, and it's not secure at all. And then there's of course also the question that we might endanger ourselves by being, you know, like being in images recognizably, etc. But at the same time, it is important to safeguard to archive in a way, like. Keep, you know, like to have photos or footage or whatever, so we remember what happened, or just to like actually analyze what happened and see if we can build better barricades next. You know, like this stuff is important. So we were thinking about what to do about this, and then with some, so like with this publishing collective that I'm part of, and then some other groups as well, we decided to create our own archive, following the student encampments in Amsterdam, like after their eviction, because there was. Lots of police violence and repression, but also very like uplifting moments. But I mean, the footage of it is like scattered everywhere. So then we created our own archive on a sort of secure server, and it's sort of a crowdsourced type of archive. So we built a website where people could upload whatever material they had and wanted to share. Like it could be written statements, just their experience of what went down in those during those days, but it could also be just pictures they took with their phone, videos, etc. And anybody could just use that website to upload any type of material, and then we all put it on one like safe server, so that we have our own crowdsourced archive with a sort of secure infrastructure to have our own data, basically. And we've been using that for several purposes. So, for instance. There have been a lot of court cases after the evictions. A bunch of people got arrested, obviously, and they tried to like pin them for pretty horrible stuff. And for cases like that, we would search the archive for videos or photos that could prove somebody's innocence. For instance, like they were accused of being at some place at some time, and then we could show a picture saying, you know, proving that wasn't actually the case. So we did try to build this type of infrastructure. Which I think is pretty cool. That's basically all that I wanted to say. What? It's not an earthquake. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Also, why the broadcast had to end.
Where can we find this?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how relevant it is now since it's been a while, of course. It's the. If you Google for Student Intifada Archiving Project.
Can I use DuckDuckGo, please?
Huh?
Can I use DuckDuckGo, please? Because you are also using the multinational corporation names for verbs like searching.
No.
Don't do this, please.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, no one can be perfect. That's the point.
No, but I mean, this is also when I hear someone say that you are kind of thinking about these social networks as documentation archives? No. Fuck
no,
that.
They're saying they're not.
These are corporations that have total different interests. We need our own.
Yeah.
We need our own channels. We need our own stories, you know, because the story that's being told now in the Dutch everything is that it has nothing to do with the Palestinian struggle. It only has to do with a war trauma.
I've been part of the student intifada in Bologna, Italy. And we tried in the end of the last academic year to also meet all together with all the intifadas in Italy, because there have been a lot of intifadas. And like, we
their own times and etc. And I wanted to ask you if your experience here in the Netherlands have been different. So if you managed to coordinate with other universities, but because for us it was impossible. But we were thinking about maybe not only to prep, because we were thinking the fact that our encampments were aiming only to pressure the single universities, while it would have been more ideal to pressure the whole system, the whole educational national system, while by occupying all different universities in the same day or in the same week, but we didn't manage to do that. So I wanted to ask you if your experience have been different.
I think just from my own experience, I think that, the left is quite obsessed with unity that the right definitely has, because fascism is relying on unity. And I think that we can learn from different... we cannot learn from them, no. I think we should learn from different forms of connections, if trees were connected to each other under the ground. One of the things, for instance, in the Amsterdam encampment that I saw was that they made a banner with a drawing of a pig in the middle, and they said this is a halal area, and that no cops are allowed in. And I know that I saw this in New York in one images, and so I think that those things travel, and we can learn from each other from publishing and archiving and all. Keeping up to date with what is happening. So, for instance, for me, I think what Unity of Field in the United States are doing is fantastic. They're really going forward with explaining what their strategies are and how was it that they were encamping the universities. And we can take that and learn from it and discuss it amongst your comrades. But yeah, I think that organizing also does happen on smaller scales and does go from down to up. And I mean, trying to say, okay, I'm going to go to the European Union to talk about the education ministries there and try to tell them, hey, maybe all of Europe's universities should not collaborate with Israel. Hey, you're from Italy, che cazzo, it's not going to work. I personally believe in grassroots, learning and then connecting through each other.
I know you want to. Can I take it for one more minute? Yeah, I also believe in the same. And I also know that, what happened here, because it's such a small country, it's easy to go across and participate in one encampment and then go to the next and support and so on. So these connections exist. My experience was I live in Amsterdam, but I studied in The Hague. So I organized in a certain way in The Hague, and I participated in a camp in Amsterdam, and I bring the knowledge from both, and I threatened my management with the Amsterdam encampment. So we never encamped, but they were already afraid that we will. So, it's already, I think it's good. Plus, we also need to take the time to build our own internal solidarity, because that's a lot of work in and of itself. Yeah.
I guess I'm just going to echo similar things, which is I think it's really powerful when social media and other things proliferate ideas, share and spread ideas around, and then you can take from them and you can learn from the South American where do our workshops here came from South America? I shouldn't say maybe. The break act, anyway. some materials we printed, but I shouldn't say where they came from. Or what they were. No? Okay. Well, even then, we just, for security culture. The powerful thing was to then spread them locally and make connections here. I think social media is really interesting for this, right? You can make a post and you can share it and 300 people see it, maybe. But if you then take it into your local level, loads more people can see it. If you can go to your local space and then talk to people.
Yeah.
I think that's just when, and at the right moment, it will proliferate back upwards and out somewhere else. And then you're making it live for your context.
And scenes.
Yep.
Yeah, everything.
You know?
So we are lucky to also have access to the cafe space just beside where, and we brought, it was kind of a big effort to get like the fabric and the paint brushes and the paint to paint the banner for the arms fair. So if anybody would like to join us to work together now and hang out and keep talking, we'll just be next door. I just wanted to say one point briefly, which I think is also reflecting the work of a project like Radio Hara. It's not simply like just to like sort of critique and analyze and think about the term documentation, because it's also about documenting process and documenting ideas,
yeah.
Right? And so documentation can also be flipped, right? It's not, you know, and you mentioned zines, but it's also learning across generations. And I think one thing, you know, I'm much more familiar with the context of, I grew up in North America, so, you know, the context there is that, you know, there's many, many movements. Some were referenced, the Black Panthers, prison abolition movements, indigenous movements for land, you know, radical environmental movements, gender justice movements, you know. And one thing that I noticed in the encampments that I found the most moving, I won't get into too much specifics about the city where I live in, but there's a contestation of a major university in Montreal, which is called McGill. The land where this university occupies is stolen, of course, and there's very specific demands around, I won't get into the details, but tangible paperwork that illustrates in this particular case for this very specific piece of land that there were agreements that this would be returned in a number of, you know, different contexts. All this to say that there's a legal basis in a very tangible way for this particular university's existence to be challenged by Indigenous people. And right, so one of the challenges for the encampment action that took place was led by elders from an Indigenous community that came to speak at the encampment. And one of the reasons it lasted so long, and Montreal was definitely one of the very longest in North America, was for this very specific, also legal reason around the history of colonization, and that there are very real, very hot, very consistent and real challenges to the institutional colonial structures that exist in the Americas as colonial edifices that actually legally are, you can challenge. Now, of course, there's all these questions of power and legality and court system and so on and so on. But the encampment moment opened up a space for elders to come and talk very tangibly about colonial history that undercuts the legitimacy of the very institution, right? And so I think that I think would have not happened, and all the, you know, folks that had initiated the encampment would have not heard from those elders if the encampment hadn't happened, right? And so that intergenerational learning, I think, is what's so important in these moments to also think about. The action, documentation beyond photos, and you know, and that's part of the reason I'm so excited to have this conversation broadcast and also documented, so that we can have a little window into all of the experiences that you've gone and what you've chosen to share in this hour as a sort of window into the movement here in Amsterdam. So thankfully, we could probably have 87 panels of activists in Amsterdam who've been involved in the Palestine movement, and that's amazing, right? Like, it's really unprecedented. So I just wanted to thank you all so much for coming here and sharing, and thanks to all those who took the time to be here. And also, of course, to OT301, it's a big effort. And so we can all hang out in the, and make a banner if you'd like. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. What else, Ellen?
Fishing for radio.
More.
At the World Wide Web.
One more.
Tulips in the ocean.
Oh, soggy. Or just salty.
Moving like seaweed.
I heard yesterday that there are farmers on the ocean floor.
Farmers meaning fish?
Yes.
Or is it like humans?
Yeah. More like robots in service of humans.
Mm.
They're farming grass.
Like garden grass.
You just got serious.
I'm just sick of grass. But maybe not on the ocean floor.
Is it like keeping it open? Tiny bit.
Sorry. To be that hard.
Yeah, I think it's garden grass.
I'm low on patience for grass.
How is it featured in the week?
I can't really remember. Yeah, I think it's very square. Yeah,
it is. In the gardens.
Yeah. And yeah, I just also think it's, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like just swarming around with like very fixed statements today, maybe.
Mm.
I just feel like it's also better to play football in a field of high, like, level flowers and stuff.
Mm. I agree. It's not the most harsh statement I ever heard.
What's the most harsh statement you ever heard? No. That's a question I don't remember. Ask you. Yeah.
I didn't start diving into the memory yet.
No.
So yeah. I'll just...
Yeah, let's stay up here.
Yeah.
We can dive in later.
Yeah.
Memory-wise.
And think of this.
Yeah. Oh, this will be at the bottom.
Or the top.
Yeah. And then maybe sink down in the layers.
Mm. Like algae.
Algae.
Heavy algae.
LGBT.
Did you like that one?
No. I couldn't resist.
It came out.
Yeah. Like a statement, I must say.
Okay, I'm excited for more statements.
Oh, I hope it's gonna... What do you say? Like,
shake off.
Yeah.
Fly away.
I hope it's gonna fly away.
Shiver.
Shiver.
I'm gonna play some silence.
Yeah. Let's have some silence.
Delivered by the adult.
And the child, Lou.
Yes.
Thank you.
Music for watching fish.
This was silverish. A bit foggy and a lot of moments. And I'm looking at it from above. It keeps me in the back of the car like a human moon, and the bottom is needing a clean. But I can see them. Something orange, floating above it, rising up in layers.
Of the silent couldn't run. What I did in million of the silent couldn't run. Every time that I turn your window,
not love.
No.
Music for catching fish.
Mm-hmm.